It's 7:33 on West Virginia morning. I'm Ben Aduccio in Morgantown. The Joint Commission on State Water Resources continued their hearings on last month's chemical leak yesterday with the testimony of two members of the medical community, Dr. Rahul Gupta with the Kanawha Charleston Health Department and Dr. Letitia Tierney, Director of the State Bureau of Public Health. Ashton Mara has more.
Dr. Gupta recommended beginning a long-term medical monitoring program in the nine-county area for anyone who was or may have been exposed to the contaminated water, something that would continue for the next 10 to 20 years.
As I've said before, we are unwilling participants of a live human experiment. If you wanted to do this experiment in a human population in a controlled environment today, we would not be able to get the ethics people. I sit on Institutional Review Board of CMC. I would not approve this study if you wanted to do it. So the idea is this has happened. What can we learn from it going forward? How can we use that to instill and regain the confidence and trust of our community, not now limited to 300,000 people, for all citizens across the state of West Virginia?
He told lawmakers the most bare bones of these types of programs would cost $150,000 in the first year, but he said that's just for the most basic monitoring, and he expected the cost would increase in subsequent years. Gupta also recommended creating hazardous chemical release response plans. These plans were recommended by the U.S. Chemical Safety Board after their investigation of an explosion at the Bayer facility in 2008, but Gupta says they were never put in place. A week before, the very same commission heard testimony that shocked lawmakers and the public alike. Dr. Scott Simonton, who serves on the State Environmental Quality Board, shared his test results that found formaldehyde in the water at a downtown Charleston restaurant. Dr. Letitia Tierney, commissioner of the State Bureau for Public Health, was asked about Dr. Simonton's results, and she reassured members of the commission that formaldehyde is a naturally occurring chemical in the environment. Senate Majority Leader John Unger pressed her about the issue.
We literally got pure product and crude product sent to us by the manufacturer of both the PPH, the di-PPH, and the MCHM. They've worked with it. They know that they're pretty stable. The MCHM is a fairly stable chemical, which means that it doesn't easily break apart. It's just sort of the law of chemistry about these carbon bonds. There's so many carbon bonds, it's very, very hard to break apart. When it does, it appears that it just changes conformation, which is a way of saying its shape. And it would be very difficult for it to break into methanol, which is what has been alleged, unless it somehow went through some combustion or catalytic thing at a very high temperature, a temperature higher than you could achieve in a home water hot water tank.
Members ran out of time before finishing their questions, and Dr. Tierney agreed to return to the commission's meeting Friday morning. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
Yesterday, the House of Delegates passed Bill 4284, also known as the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. The bill's purpose would be to prevent discrimination against pregnant women in the workplace. However, the debate during the floor session was not primarily on the bill itself, but rather a proposed amendment. Aaron Payne reports.
The Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, among other things, would have employers be required to provide reasonable accommodations for pregnant workers. This can range from providing a chair for a cashier to a different work schedule. Delegates did have questions about details of the bill, including Delegate Denise Campbell, who asked Delegate Tim Manchin, who would determine what accommodations would be proper.
So when there would be requested modifications for someone who is pregnant, that is normally guided by the physician?
Yes, ma'am.
And that physician is historically an OBGYN?
Historically, but not required under this
right.
Act.
Or a family practice or a nurse practitioner?
Qualified health care provider, I think is the term we used
in defining. Very good. Very good.
However, the main topic of debate was on an amendment proposed by Delegate Michael Folk, which would add the unborn fetus of the pregnant worker in the bill's definition of person.
Quite frankly, a vote for this amendment is a vote for the unborn children. The whole purpose of this bill is to protect the mother, which by common sense says you should be protecting the child too.
Delegate Manchin then began to oppose the amendment due to its potential confusing nature from a legal standpoint.
What you have to understand is, first of all, if you take a literal reading of this bill, now this bill is not there to protect the mother. This bill is there for a pregnant worker to receive reasonable accommodations so that they can continue work. First of all, if you look at his definition and how he wants to change it, it now would basically make it illegal for a fetus to discriminate against a pregnant worker.
Volk proposed another amendment that attempted to clear up the language to better get his point across. Other delegates were concerned that without the amendment, an unborn fetus would not be protected by the bill. Delegate Daryl Calls asked Delegate Manchin questions about reasonable accommodations, such as providing bottled water, with the CDC's current recommendation that pregnant women affected by this month's chemical spill not drink tap water with detectable levels of MCHM.
That reasonable accommodation made on behalf of the pregnant woman or her unborn child, the spring water availability.
On behalf of the pregnant woman, because it's of her pregnancy and a related medical condition.
And to be sure that that accommodation was made, you don't believe that this amendment helps the bill?
No, sir. I think it confuses the bill. I think it makes it unwieldy, and I think it will make it impossible for employers to administer it and to react well.
Both amendments were rejected by votes of 34 to 60 and 38 to 56. However, the bill without the amendments was passed 94 to 0 and moves on to the Senate. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Aaron Payne in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:40. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin announced yesterday that his office is exploring options for home water testing following last month's chemical spill into the Elk River. As Dave Mistich reports, Tomlin's announcement came just hours after reporters continually asked about the possibility during yesterday's news briefing with federal officials from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Environmental Protection Agency.
Like you in this room, and all the 300,000 West Virginians, I am frustrated and angry. I share your concerns about the water crisis, as does my team here in West Virginia, the national experts we have depended upon for guidance, and the federal partners who are standing with me today.
The governor and federal officials updated the public yesterday on the current status of ongoing efforts following the January 9th chemical spill. Dr. Tanja Popovic of the CDC reiterated there is currently no information available on the effect of MCHM on humans, but says scientists at the agency came up with the 1 parts per million threshold of the chemical in the water by converting research on animals and applying that information to sensitive populations.
To us, our scientific experts have taken a safety blanket of a factor of 1,000 to calculate how much, what levels in the water would be protective and not cause harm.
Popovic says West Virginia health officials are currently analyzing data about health symptoms reported after exposure to the spill and said symptoms reported were generally mild due to short-term exposure. She said the CDC doesn't attribute any adverse health effects to the spill. Popovic also noted their recommendations do not deem the water safe, but rather acceptable for use, and that the agency has no plans to monitor the population affected. EPA Region 3 Administrator Sean Garvin says members of his agency have been on the ground in West Virginia since the morning after the spill and have been acting in an assisting capacity.
EPA can confirm today that the spill site is stabilized. Work is underway to dismantle and empty all the tanks. West Virginia American Water Company sampling results remain at non-detect for lower parts per or at lower parts per billion levels. In other words, at orders of magnitude below the health risk levels recommended by CDC for MCHM and PPH.
EPA. With many residents complaining of a licorice smell persisting in the water, Bill Regato, the EPA's drinking water branch chief, says his agency is looking at studies done on what types of chemicals would leave a residue in water pipes. He says he doesn't believe the chemicals involved in the January 9th spill would adhere to the pipes of homes and businesses that have been properly flushed.
Chemicals with low partition coefficients would most likely not adhere to piping. The two chemicals that are involved here, MCMH and PPH, have very low partition coefficients. So it's anticipated that it would not leave a residual, but it's an issue we need to look at.
Argato says the studies they're examining do not provide information on the specific chemicals involved in the Charleston spill. Yet reporters at the briefing continued to ask about testing in homes as a means to calm continued concerns of the public. Governor Tomlin responded with the following.
Well, once again, we'll go back to, you know, what the scientists have said, or the experts have said. You know, we will continue to rely upon the testing that's done out there, both at West Virginia American and around the affected area at the testing at the 10 parts per billion. Right now, there are no plans to go into 100,000 customers' homes to take individual samples.
However, yesterday evening, Tomlin announced via Twitter that his team was exploring options for home testing. And spokesperson Amy Goodwin confirmed it is something the governor's office has discussed and will continue to examine. Goodwin says Tomlin's office is developing a plan of action, considering the best strategy, as well as mapping and issues related to going into people's homes. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Dave Mistich in Charleston.
West Virginia's going through a tough winter, not just because several places have endured record low temperatures, but also because it's on pace in many areas to get more than usual amounts of snowfall. A winter storm this week left Morgantown buried in nearly 1 foot of snow. The storm closed down West Virginia University for a day, which isn't typical, and more snow seems to be on the way. Joe Merchant, a meteorologist for the National Weather Service, says West Virginia is in a unique location when it comes to getting dumped with winter weather.
For the most part, the lowlands, we only average about one snowfall of more than 6 inches per year, while once you get into the central mountains, it's around two or three. And then obviously in the northern mountains and at the higher altitudes, you'll get more of those types of events. But for the most part, getting 6 inches or more of snowfall in one storm is pretty uncommon.
But what about this year? With this particular winter, how does the state rank up?
It seems as if we are ahead of pace as far as total snowfall goes. In the lowlands right now, we're seeing, for the most part, somewhere between 15 to 20 inches already has fallen across the lowlands, which in our average, our 30-year average, is about 20 to 25. So we still have February and March, most of February and March to go. And so I would imagine that we're going to finish ahead of pace.
But Merchant says West Virginia doesn't seem to be on a record-setting pace for snow. West Virginia's higher elevations see much more snowfall than the valleys.
That snowshoe is at around 68 inches for the season so far, and they generally are around the 150-inch range for the year. Same with Canaan Valley. And when you start getting down into the central mountains, their seasonal average is around 50 inches, and Beckley, for instance, is at about 31 right now.
The winter's also brought some extremely cold temperatures. According to the National Weather Service, this winter has brought record lows to several of the state's cities, including Charleston, Morgantown, and Elkins.
And that has been an unusual few years, more so than just one particular year. I think, we've seen quite a variance in the weather. And the patterns that bring it over the last few years.
Typically, the winter begins to taper down in mid-March, so don't put away those snow shovels, gloves, and scarves just yet. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast. We're interested in your feedback. You can send it to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Concord University, and Marshall University. Our news director is Beth Voorhees. Our director is Bob Powell. From Morgantown, I am Ben Aduccio. Good morning.